Hello, and welcome to the SearchSoftwareQuality.com podcast, Software Development, Mastering Key Requirements Phases. Our speaker is consultant Robin F. Goldsmith, J.D., president of GoPro Management, Inc. This event is being hosted on SearchSoftwareQuality.com. My name is Jan Stafford, and I'm your moderator and executive editor of SearchSoftwareQuality.com. Thanks for joining us, Robin.
Thank you for having me.
For our listeners, if you have any problems with the sound or quality of this audio cast, please write to us at editor@searchsoftwarequality.com, and our tech support team will get in touch with you within 24 hours. Now, let's get started with our interview. So, Robin, what are the key phases in a successful software requirements process, and which one do development groups skip most often?
Well, let me answer that in a couple of ways, Jen. Many people are familiar with the International Institute for Business Analysis, IIBA, and their BABOK, the Business Analysis Body of Knowledge. The BABOK identifies a number of key knowledge areas, which are often interpreted as phases of the requirements process. Start with what is called enterprise analysis, and there is requirements planning and monitoring, elicitation of requirements, requirements analysis, solution assessment and validation, and then requirements management and communication. Now, the problem is that those are, and the BABOK states quite explicitly, those are not meant to be interpreted as phases. But yet, they're easily interpreted as phases, especially the enterprise analysis, which in many ways is equated with project initiation and feasibility analysis. It's the point at which the project is sort of being defined. Some organizations do that prior to a project. Some of them do it as part of the project. And many of them, frankly, don't do it explicitly at all, which is a real problem. The fact is that elicitation, the finding out from the users, typically the stakeholders, interviewing and reviewing documents and workshops and so forth, which is a primarily visible activity of requirements definition, is often thought of, especially in the BABOK, as occurring by itself and then followed by the requirements analysis, which analyzes. And then that, in turn, is followed by some kind of a solution assessment. And somewhere kind of on the outside of this is the planning and the monitoring that says here's when we're going to do each of these things. And there is requirements management, keeping track of what you've found and controlling changes and so forth. Now, I would suggest that that's not a very helpful way to visualize or conceptualize how requirements are identified. And for one reason, because elicitation needs to occur throughout everything. Elicitation is integral to enterprise analysis. Elicitation is also involved with the analysis of whatever you found. Elicitation may be involved with solution assessment. The other thing is that the way that the elicitation is described, it's kind of a mechanical activity with the analysis being some kind of a separate activity. And part of the reason for that is because people do think of it as being separate phases. I would encourage you to think of requirements discovery as involving intertwined and integrated elicitation and analysis, thinking as you're going, but also and some assessment and validation as you're going, plus checkpoints along the way to double check and provide more formalized analysis of perhaps larger bodies of information and assessment of larger pieces of the requirements. Now, I would suggest that instead, if you want to think of it as phases, that a more rational approach, and I don't mean to make a pun there because I'm not trying to promulgate any vendor's products, but that a more appropriate approach, certainly the one that I encourage in my book, with my consulting clients and in my training seminars, is that it's important to first discover what the real business requirements are. And that has two major components. The starting point is using what we call the problem pyramid, a very powerful tool, to discover the top-level business requirements. And business requirements are not simply vague objectives. Business requirements are specific, deliverable whats that, when delivered, provide value. Based on them, then there is the opportunity for doing feasibility analysis, for project initiation analysis, whatever your terms might be there, and trade-off analysis based upon more meaningful definitions of costs and risks and time involved in satisfying those business requirements. That in turn leads typically to a negotiation and an identification of some subset of those top-level business requirements that, in fact, are going to be addressed for implementation. It's that subset, that implementation project, that then leads to further, more detailed requirements discovery, so that you drive those top-level business requirements down to more detailed business requirements. And I would suggest doing that in several different iterations. Go down a level or two at a time, double-check, go down a level or two more, double check, and so forth. And when you get those driven down to a suitable level where they're clear, complete, and understandable and testable, then that becomes the suitable point for the next phase, which is translating them into the definition of a product, system, or software, which in fact will meet those real business requirements, and that in turn can be elaborated with use cases, and then that in turn leads to the definition of the implementation work for a more detailed technical design of that product, system, or software, and the development and testing and implementation and so forth of it. So a long answer to a short question.
That's great, Robin. Now, could you suggest a couple of proactive test design best practices teams could use to catch and define requirements early in the development process?
Certainly. So there are really three ways that we're dealing with, or we can be dealing with, getting the requirements right. The first is the discovery process that I've just talked about. The second is applying various techniques for catching problems with the requirements before they get turned into designs or before they get turned into products, where those problems are much more expensive and difficult to both catch and correct. And proactive testing, which is a methodology that I've developed, addresses this in three ways. The first way is directly, through traditional reviews of requirements and designs, and the reason I say and designs is because it's very often common that people mainly have designs, not requirements, and the major reason why there are problems with their designs is because the requirements have not been defined adequately. But reviews, as traditionally carried out, tend to deal primarily with issues of form. I say that because they deal with issues of clarity. Clarity and testability are really form issues. You see, a requirement can be perfectly clear and perfectly testable and perfectly wrong. And the traditional review questions, the review techniques that are looking for clarity and finding ambiguity and addressing ambiguity problems, there is no certainty that they will identify requirements which are wrong. In fact, there's a very good chance that they will not identify requirements which are wrong. And they aren't going to identify requirements that are overlooked, because if a requirement's been overlooked, nobody's going to check it for ambiguity or clarity or certainty or testability. So our proactive testing techniques, we have more than 21 ways to review or evaluate requirements, more than 15 ways to review or evaluate designs. And with regard to the requirements techniques, a number of them are indeed ways to catch problems of form, clarity, ambiguity, and so forth. But we also have very powerful additional special techniques that most people are frankly not aware of that help identify numerous requirements which have been overlooked. And we have other additional techniques which, once again, most people are not aware of, which help identify requirements which are wrong. And so when we apply a mixture of these techniques, we tend to catch a whole lot more requirements problems, and especially requirements which are wrong or overlooked. Now, the other part of proactive testing involves planning and designing tests. And the act of planning and designing tests also reveals issues with the requirements. One of those techniques is involved with planning and designing proactive user acceptance tests, which we facilitate the users, the business people, developing a very structured set of what we call proactive user acceptance criteria, which are not simply reacting to the requirements that have been defined, but actually are very powerful in identifying requirements which are wrong and overlooked. In addition, as we go further downstream and are planning and designing using proactive testing techniques, special techniques that help reveal numerous conditions which are ordinarily overlooked, to test, to develop systems and software, what's happening is that the reason that most of these conditions are overlooked is because they've been overlooked in the requirements and design. And when we use these proactive testing risk analysis and risk identification techniques, they tend to reveal things that the design has overlooked, typically because the requirements have overlooked them. So those are the shorthand discussion of these many different techniques that we use.
Now, Robin, which requirements process is best handled using automated tools, and why?
Well, automated tools represent both a real strength and a real weakness of the requirements world. They represent a strength in that they can take over a number of time-consuming and laborious activities, and I would say that by far the best known and most widely used and probably most productive use of automation with regard to requirements is what are called requirements management tools, requirements managers. And there are, I don't know, a dozen of those that are pretty well known. A number of them have been enhanced of late and integrated with other capabilities like application lifecycle management and so forth. Some are integrated to some extent with testing. But requirements management is the term which is most widely applied to the requirements process. And the problem is that the terms that people use consciously and unconsciously indicate their thinking about it. And requirements management is a purely administrative activity. It's an activity involved with keeping track of your requirements, knowing what you've got, knowing what people want to change, control controlling changes, controlling that the changes are approved or only the approved changes are made, controlling that changes have been made in an approved manner. Central to that is what is called a traceability matrix. This is a purely mechanical activity that is developed by cross-referencing the various points within the development process where a particular requirement is used. So where that requirement is used in the design, where it's used in the construction, where it's tested, where there are user instructions for it, these are common cross-reference points. And then you can, when you have a need to make a change to a requirement, you can use the traceability matrix to trace forward from the requirement to identify all the places that might be affected by a change in the requirement. Or, as often occurs, you become aware of the change downstream because a test has been changed or a module has been changed or something like that. And the traceability matrix will allow you to trace backwards from the point at which the requirement was used to where the requirement actually was defined, and then you can further trace forward again with the revised requirement to make sure that any modifications are in fact reflected appropriately. Now, requirements management is a necessary thing, but it has nothing to do with whether the requirements are right. And by far, getting the requirements right is the far more important part of the requirements process. And there are a handful of tools coming onto the market now which are helpful in defining requirements. But each of these tools is pretty comparable in some ways to a fancy word processor. And a word processor will catch some grammar problems, but a word processor will never be able to assure that you've found out about a requirement. A word processor will never be able to assure that the requirement is correct. To be fair, some of the structuring, most of these are based upon generating use cases and diagramming their usage. Can help reveal some inconsistencies, help reveal some questions. But these are by no means sufficient by themselves to rely upon. They're helpful. But automation, as I said, is a trap because people often assume that all they have to do is use the automated tool and that's covered all their bases.
Thanks, Robin. Now, could you tell me or name a couple of pros and cons of using use cases to define requirements?
Sure. Use cases are a valuable technique. They're widely recognized, widely used. People like them a lot. Use cases, in case you're not familiar with them, are defined as how an actor interacts with the system. And an actor is usually the user, but it could be another system. It could be a piece of equipment. And a use case is written typically in a step-by-step sequence from the perspective of the actor. So there are several different formats, but essentially it's the actor does this, the system does that in response. And use cases are very concrete. They're very step-by-step. They are helpful for communication. If a user says, I expect the system to act this way, a developer can actually implement a system that acts that way. And those are all strengths of use cases. And I believe that use cases are a valuable technique. But use cases are by no means perfect. They are no means a panacea. And they are not what many of their advocates claim for them. First of all, there are a number of prominent people in the requirements community that say essentially use cases are the user's requirements, and the user's requirements are use cases. Well, I'm going to differ with that for two reasons. First of all, because use cases are simply a format for documenting information. The format can be applied to user requirements, but usually what a use case is describing is not the user's requirements, but rather the usage requirements of an expected product or system design. And when the use case is describing the expected product, it's usually at the expense of having identified what that product is actually supposed to accomplish, which is the real business or user requirements. It's made more difficult because many people who use use cases treat them very religiously, and they don't want to hear anything other than that use cases are perfect and wonderful by themselves. And they tend to attack the messenger. So that's a second problem with use cases, which, by the way, is a problem that many different methodologies that have zealots, advocates, tend to encounter. Another problem with use cases, and this is at least partly recognized by many of the more responsible use case advocates, is that use cases are good for describing usage behaviors. They're not good, and they're not intended to describe quality factors such as usability or performance levels, things like that. And they're not good for describing business rules. Now, business rules and quality factors are two major components of business requirements. And use cases are very poor at A, assuring that those have been identified, and B, in fact, capturing them in intelligent manners. Because the use case doesn't have a mechanism for capturing it directly with the step-by-step description. And so use cases tend to capture such information in separate sections. And when you've got one piece of related information in one place and another piece of related information in a different place, the chances of them being put together are very low. And so what's happening is that the use case is actually in many ways interfering with understandability and meaning. So I haven't said that use cases are a bad thing, but they are by no means a perfect thing, and they are by no means the only technique that you should use.
Thank you, Robin. That is the end of our questions today. We've run out of time, but I appreciate your being with us.
Well, thank you much.
And our listeners can submit questions regarding this audio cast via email at editor@certsoftwarequality.com. Robin's Goldsmith's answers to your questions will appear in our Ask the Expert section. Thank you again, Robin.
Thank you.
And that concludes today's audio cast on software development, mastering key requirements phases. This is Jan Stafford signing off. Have a great day.